comics and games to movies and TV. This is The Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA. Nerd Rage. Nerd Rage. Now here are the nerds.
Welcome to the Nerd Show here on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Your host here, Nick Kenny, with Micah Kilpatrick and special guest, Scott Maggerflesh, also known as Darth Monger. He's never going to get sick of hearing that.
Nope, never.
Wow, happy new year, everyone. We've, just a few days in. Boy, a lot's happened. We have a lot to dissect from, you know, the shows and movies that came out right at the end of 2021. So tonight's all about Spider-Man No Way Home and the first episode of The Book of Boba Fett. We have not watched the latest episode as of yet. I think it's unfair for us to talk about it that night it comes out, too, because y'all are probably racing home to go watch it, yeah. I hope. But we're just going to dive deep into, you know, some of the best things that have happened in 2021, which for me was Spider-Man No Way Home.
All right.
I don't know. Micah, you finally saw it.
Yeah, I saw it the Monday after Christmas. So it was December 27th.
Sixth. Seventh.
Seventh.
That doesn't matter. It was, it was the
December
Monday after
27th.
Christmas.
Something.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah,
that's. I mean, I went and saw it at the Crest in downtown Greeley. That was my first time seeing a movie there.
Wait, it was at the Crest?
Yeah.
Oh, dang it!
Dag nabbit, Micah. Sorry to ruin your Wednesday night with that information, but got to enjoy a couple of adult beverages, some snacks. My one just comment though is the volume wasn't very loud.
Hmm.
And I, you know, as we know, when I'm getting the sound check and everything, my ears are rather sensitive, so things are really loud. And that's usually how I feel in some movie theaters. Like, wow, like, I feel the vibrations rumbling through the seats. Like, could you turn it down just a little bit because it's not enjoyable for me? But yeah, the Crest, I was just like, can you just nudge it up a little bit there?
Yeah.
It is a nice theater, by the way. I've been there twice. Once, twice, something like that.
I like it. I'm gonna go back.
I need to check it out. I haven't seen a movie there yet, but I would like to.
I tell you, watching No Way Home, holding an old-fashioned,
nice,
is just great. But also the moments where I was just sitting there with my jaw dropped,
yeah,
holding the dang drink. So I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to move right now.
That is kind of how I felt. I felt very jaw drop. A lot of the movie. This was much different than I expected it to be. This was more adult.
Yeah,
the other movies.
Well, let's start with what we got from the trailer. You know, so I was going into it assuming that this spell that Doctor Strange was going to cast for everyone to forget who Peter Parker is, you know, was more challenging than it was. Clearly, it wasn't. He's just like, all right, I can whip this up in no time. Wong, of course, has a little issue with it, but it's really when, you know, Peter kind of starts spiraling and going crazy is where Doctor Strange has that problem and has to, you know, condense everything into that little shield brick box, whatever it was, glass box, and then that was kind of, well, that was it. All right, well, we cancel the spell, we get some things happening. So already the plot took a different turn than what I was expecting with it, and it was incredible. I love the connections they've made. I loved how they tied together the original Spider-Man and the Amazing Spider-Man. You know, noticing, and there will be spoilers, Micah, if we just want to have the spoilers go off in case people haven't seen it yet.
Spoiler alert.
It's, here we are. I mean, these villains start popping up from, you know, the different eras, the different multiverses. But these people were the ones who knew who Spider-Man's identity was.
Yep.
Doc Ock and the Sandman. And they knew Peter Parker.
Yep.
So, of course, when you see Peter talking to the dean of the university on the highway, I mean, I was getting chills and goosebumps because I go, Doc Ock's coming. Yeah, I don't know when, but yeah, I know he's coming. And then, you know, sure enough, he's like, well, you're not Peter. And it's like, wait, what's going on? Yeah. So, you know, they're coming out of the multiverse, all these people who knew Spider-Man's true identity. Every single one. Jamie Foxx's character, what is it, Electro. Electro.
Yeah.
Green Goblin. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, it was just great to see him back. I love how all that happened.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, well, this seems to be a bit of a problem here for our good little Spider-Man. Plus, the comedy of it. I mean, it was not as – it was silly, but not like a childish silly. You know, you had Happy trying to win Aunt May back, and that was just – that was yeah. comical. But it just comes right at the tail end. I mean, truly the tail end of Spider-Man Far From Home. So really, if you're watching those back-to-back, it's just boom. You get into Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah,
that was the first little brief recap. But,
no, it's great. I think, you know, one thing for me is I can't remember the last time I was at a movie theater and the entire audience applauded when things happened. And I thought it was so cool when Andrew Garfield's character comes out and everybody applauds. They're like, oh my gosh, it's really going to happen. And then when Tobey Maguire shows up and everybody applauded. And I think that the excitement around the film and the possibilities of what could come, I think they nailed it. I don't know how you could have done what they were trying to accomplish any better and have it go off the way it did in such a positive. I still say it is far and away the best of the Marvel Spider-Man movies, and I think the way that it's set up is at least open to you can do a lot more with it, and you can go a ton of different directions, and now it all kind of fits and makes sense. So,
God, when exactly did you go? Because what I got was every time something happened, some kid was crying. That's what I got.
Yeah,
I feel like if you're a parent, you are no longer eligible to be a movie theater nerd. At some point, you have to say, well, I love my kids enough to not take them to the movie theater unless it's targeted for kids. Because I can't have my kids going, what's going on right now, Mom?
That's fair. Yeah, I went, I think it was the second weekend. But I actually went down in Westminster, so I have a buddy who met me halfway, and we went and saw it. And it was I think we went to like either a 7:30 or an 8 o'clock show. So, but yeah,
maybe
I did not
problem.
Experience that. And I know we've talked about your experience, and that's unfortunate. Because yes, I believe that you should be considerate enough that if your kid is going to make noise at the movie, that you would we'll leave, or that you're not going to be on your phone during the film or whatever else. But
yeah,
you know.
I get that in movies and in live theater and stuff. Yeah. Of you're in a different world, you have this giant screen in front of you, you're surrounded by sound, and you kind of feel for a moment you're just there, and to be taken away from that from somebody talking, a kid crying, or that, you know, that blue light that happens a row in front of you just drives me nuts because I get distracted very easily. If anyone who listens to this show or Nick's Max, I can go about 1,000 different directions on a moment's notice.
But we're going to stick with Spider-Man.
With Spider-Man, yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, we're reintroduced to all this, but Peter Parker feels like he can help them.
Yeah.
You know, the Tobey Maguire's back, Andrew Garfield's back. Love how every time they refer to Andrew Garfield, I think, Scott, you mentioned that, they're calling him amazing.
Well,
you were amazing.
They just did it a couple times, and they were kind of having this whole identity crisis thing, and they were struggling and everything else. And Tobey Maguire looks at him, he goes, hey, man, you're amazing. Just remember that. You're amazing. And they only made that reference to Andrew Garfield. So it's like, even in those elements, they kind of made it, okay, he's the amazing Spider-Man and everything else. So just those little elements, those little nods were really good. And yeah, but it fits Peter Parker's, you know, mindset, his mentality, his character. He wants to help everybody. He always wants to do that. So it made sense. And the other ones just completely jumped on board with it as well, which I thought was, again, telling that even in this multiverse where all these different Spider-Mans, at their core, they're still kind of the same individual.
Oh, yeah. And you get three of the smartest people in all these universes together working, and they're doing a good job.
Yeah.
You know, our current Peter Parker has, you know, all these resources from Iron Man, and, you know, they're going to work on, well, starting with Doc Ock.
Yeah.
You know, he was a good guy.
Yeah.
Until the AI kind of
it shorted out and took over. Yeah.
And that's why we got Doc Ock. But, you know, deep down, he was a good guy. And boy, when they just flipped that switch, it was just incredible.
Well, but remember, when they do that, he leaves. So if you remember, they swap out the chip because they create one that's not shorted. They swap it out, and he kind of panics, and he leaves. So we don't know what's coming from him. But again, I think it was awesome the fact that he became the guy that he was supposed to be.
He was always meant to be.
Yeah, the
universe.
Voices were gone, and he was a good guy. So, and we see that at the end of the film.
I love that redemption.
I
That's
do too.
Exactly the redemption that I want.
Yep. But, you know, it was great because it wasn't all the characters, you know, because
right.
Green Goblin is still manipulating.
Oh, yeah. He is.
You know, he's fully aware of going on, even when, who is that? What's his character's name? Not Green Lantern. Not Gary Busey. Yeah. It looks like Gary Busey.
Norman Osborn.
There we go.
Wow.
Should have my script in front of me. There's no script. This is going rogue. You know, even when Norman Osborn is there,
he's still not there.
No, oh, it's Green Goblin absorbing that information. I mean, it's just like a deep spy. You
it's
know?
Kind of letting him out enough to manipulate the people around him to get to the end game, get to the goal that he's trying to accomplish.
Well, yeah. So. And you have Electro getting all angry because, you know, well, you're the reason I'm this way and it wouldn't be here for you. And so, like, tempers are starting to fly again. And then, of course, as anything happens in a superhero film, all hell breaks loose. And the Spider-Mans have some work to do.
Yeah.
The Spider-Men? Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
Spider-Men. I don't know how much time we have left in the segment, Micah, because I feel like I could dive in 2 minutes, so we won't get into the juicier parts of it. But, you know, it was, you know, it's got to your point of seeing Andrew Garfield come through and Tobey Maguire just was, I don't know, so much nostalgia of the past 15 years of Spider-Man movies that each had, you know, some charm to them.
They
liked the original one because it's Spider-Man. They just did such an incredible job telling that story. You know, looking back now, it's just like, okay, well, those are fun, but they wouldn't stand up to today's Marvel movies. Then with the Amazing Spider-Man that was supposed to be a trilogy and ended up only didn't make it as a trilogy. We'll go into that another day. And then to what we have now with Tom Holland's Spider-Man, who is, I think, the most relatable. I don't think Andrew Garfield or Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man would have fit into this Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Not into this, but I do think that Tobey Maguire, from the geek that Peter Parker was supposed to be, fit that mold the best. Tobey Maguire always seemed to be the less cool. And you know, no disrespect to Tobey Maguire as an actor, because he's really good. But it just, for me, that was like, out of the three of them, he was the most Peter Parker-ish.
Just not the right Spider-Man.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
He was a better Peter Parker, not a good Spider-Man.
Agreed.
Andrew Garfield was a better Spider-Man than a Peter Parker.
Yes.
And Tom Holland is like...
I think best overall.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of get the, you know...
A blend of the two of them.
A blend of the two, and yeah, so it's sort of...
And they all did fine performance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no problems with each of those films.
And they did great performances in this movie.
Yes.
Well, and even better, I liked the throwback, too, of, boy, I remember how much I enjoyed these villains. Because they didn't seem like much because I'm clouded by a Thanos and a Ronin.
Yeah.
So you'll go back to, like, Electro. I was like, oh, come on. But then, oh, man, Jamie Foxx, I forgot. He killed it.
He did. He really did.
Doc Ock. I mean, I forgot how much I enjoyed his character in the original Spider-Man. Oh, can we just, before we break, throw a love how quickly they introduced our best lawyer friend from New York, you know, from Daredevil himself.
Yeah, we get Matt Murdock right away, and he catches the brick. And it's like, how'd you do that? I'm a really good lawyer.
That was a great line.
It.
Great
yes.
line. Because we had just had a week before the teaser in Hawkeye.
In Hawkeye that we were going to see Kingpin.
Yes. Yeah. So it was just, oh my gosh, they are building up so many pieces to just epicness in Marvel.
Great stuff. Yep.
We'll talk more about the Spider-Man No Way Home movie after this break. Stay tuned to 103.1 1310 KFKA. Welcome back to the Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, sponsored by Right Coast Pizza. We have Scott Magerflesh, Micah Kilpatrick, and me, Nick Kenny, talking Spider-Man No Way Home. Stay tuned for more. We'll be talking the Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 1.
I have not seen that, so I will be silent.
Oh, Micah. It's only 38 minutes.
I'm sorry. I've been really busy this week.
You did warn us about that, so that's all right.
The end of December and early January is really really hectic for me, so I often cannot do anything.
But he did go see Spider-Man No Way Home, so we could talk about it. So good on Micah for doing that.
It's just that to me tops I wouldn't put it up against Infinity War or Endgame, just because of all the action you get from that and all the superheroes you have there. But still, as I think as a standalone movie, probably one of my favorites. Ragnarok might beat it.
Yeah. Well, and I think we saw a really positive, you know, we talked about before with Hawkeye, you know, last week that I thought the last few episodes really built up and did well with it. There was a couple issues we had with the whole fight sequence on the ice, but, you know, it got good at the end. But you had Shang-Chi right before that that came out that I thought was excellent. Then you had the, and actually I think the Eternals came out first, but the Eternals I was not a big fan of. And so it's sort of like we had these peaks and valleys throughout the course of at least the last half of last year with Marvel and everything else. But I think they did really good with how they ended it with No Way Home and then the ending of Hawkeye. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's just it's leading up to me. I want more.
Yep.
Well, it's transformed to you know, toward the end of the film where, you know, they're battling on the Statue of Liberty that now is bearing a Captain America shield.
That was a little crazy, but I get it. Okay.
That's Now, I'm sorry. They hero worship Captain America
much. Yeah, they totally do in that. And I think it's funny because I almost feel like, okay, now the MCU is not really our universe. There's a different universe that a lot of this stuff happens in because I loved how, you know, when Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield are talking about, wait, there's, you know, you have aliens in your world. And so, you know, just some of that element that's getting there. But yeah, the whole, and even with the Broadway musical that they did in Hawkeye about, you know, Captain America and the love there. So it was almost like they had gone to 11 with some of those, that God worship that Micah referenced in that regard. So yeah, I see it. And it spills over into the statue and all that other stuff, but yeah.
And they don't remember that, you know, they were kind of after Captain America in Civil
War.
There
was a while for that, yeah. He was a bad guy.
Boy, how amazing people forget how quickly.
Crazy. Yeah,
well, we can resonate with
that,
too.
But then you were going to talk about the redemption side of things and the kind of the third act of the movie.
Yeah, well, you know, you get the battle that they have time to prepare for.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of know what's going on. And, of course, you know, I like Zendaya a lot. I think she did incredibly in that film, too.
Yes.
As MJ.
I think this was her best performance of all the three, by far.
Well, like, because she's very standoffish, the first one, you know. Well, and teenage angst.
Yeah. There was more asked of her, and she definitely delivered.
Well, and
all
even
of them delivered.
Yeah.
This was a huge step up for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Well, all three of the actors we've had for that trilogy were just involved, you know, we're a part of it. I loved the whole Doctor Strange in the dungeon thing and capturing people, and you know, that was just kind of comical too. His little goatee dye there, but I like seeing this side of Doctor Strange, and you know, they kind of go back to where they first met each other. We're using our made up names. So I'm Spider-Man, you know, not Doctor Strange. And then he's like, no, call me Steven. He does. He's like, okay, that's weird.
Yeah, that's weird.
I like that. You know, he's kind of taken on that fatherly figure, you know, that Peter had with Iron Man and Tony Stark.
Yeah. Well, and then you see, you know, they start to talk about the people that they've lost and they all go through some of that. And, you know, I thought it was great in The Amazing Spider-Man because we don't get MJ. We get Gwen Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
And we see what happens to Gwen Stacy and everybody was heartbroken over that and everything else. And they talk about that in this movie. And he was like, yeah, you know, I lost Gwen. And it's like, that was my MJ, which was a great reference. And then you see that save that he makes on the Statue of Liberty with her that I thought was just phenomenal. I thought it was great from a redemptive standpoint and the look on his face. And again, great acting in that regard where he's like just has this sense of accomplishment and it, like the weight of the world got lifted off of his shoulders because of that moment, not anything else, but that moment right there.
So poetic.
I leaned in right there and I was like, he's going to save her. He's going to save her. He's going to save her. Because I mean, that was, I remember the silence that I felt in The Amazing Spider-Man where Gwen Stacy's character died.
And he misses her. And you see that with Tom Holland's character with MJ and you're, there's almost this moment. It's like, oh no, not again.
Well, and I knew as soon as that was going to happen, as soon as, you know, oh no, not again. I'm like, that's why Garfield's
That's
here.
Why we got the Amazing Spider-Man right there. Yep,
there's,
I get it.
There are so many different, you know, Easter eggs and so many different nods and winks. But I feel like none of them were tacky.
No.
They just all felt – it did slow down a little bit in the middle.
Yep.
That's my only knock that I can think of. against the movie. It did slow down.
But those that don't slow down, I feel, have too much. Like, let's look at the last episode of Hawkeye. It didn't slow down one bit, and it was way too much. Yeah. It needed that slower time to process that. I didn't mind the slowdown a bit. It kind of showed the brevity of the situation, the weight. I'm sitting there questioning, you know, whatever Avengers are still left, why aren't they coming to help Peter?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, where is everybody? Although, you know, Wanda's going through her own stuff, you know, because this is, again, right after Spider-Man Far From Home, and, you know, Strange is, you know, more involved than he had been. You know, you have Falcon and the Winter Soldier out doing their own thing. So I think as these shows continue to come out, we'll see why no one's around to really help. But that's why you get Matt Murdock. When's he coming back to help us out a bit?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you guys think of the ending?
Are we talking about the post-credit scene? Well, first of all, for Doc Ock to come back and save the day,
that was
I think was just perfect to wrap up his character and everything he stood for from that original
trilogy. Redemption.
I can't disagree.
Everyone was redeemed. I mean, truly. Mm-hmm. Well, and then for them to sacrifice. I mean, Peter did make the right decision to everyone forgets.
Yeah, and you know, and Toby was able to stop, you know, Tom Holland from killing the Green Goblin, which was kind of that redemptive standpoint.
I think that's my favorite part of the movie.
And then when he gets stabbed, you're like, oh, no. You're like, please don't let it flip. And then I liked it at the end. He's like, I've been stabbed before.
Yeah.
He's like, he's hurting, but he's going to survive. So that was great. But yeah, then you get into the stuff in the post-credit. And I was okay with the Doctor Strange stuff because kind of saw that building up with What If and some of those other things. So it was good to see footage of what's coming, but nothing there. But the other one, I think, is the one that you're talking about, which was the greatest, here we go, and we've got more options.
I haven't seen any of the Venom movies, so I have nothing to...
The first one was great. The second one I wasn't a big fan of, but that's always been that, you know, that kind of play with the dark symbiote and everything else. And I love the fact that you see Tom Hardy, you know, as, you know, Eddie Brock, and then all of a sudden he goes away because he's not from this universe, but there's that little glob of symbiote that remains that now builds that where you can go that certain route where he goes towards Spider-Man and wants to be a part of that. And then, of course, you get the real suit, the original suit.
Oh, yeah. That
the amazing
blue and red
suit when he goes off because nobody knows who he is. He's just this, you know, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And I loved it. It was so good.
Everything. I can't wait to go see it again. That's a movie I will see twice in theaters because it deserves it.
Oh,
it
absolutely.
It was absolutely incredible.
And the music was good, too. The
music was good.
Especially during the emotional moments.
Oh, yeah.
With Aunt May, I did not see that coming.
I didn't either. A little devastating.
I figured Peter Parker had lost enough between his experiences with Thanos and, you know, being blipped out. And then, oh, that was hard.
Yeah.
But also necessary for Happy to kind of let that go.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Nerd Show stamp of approval for Spider-Man No Way Home. Yeah. That trilogy truly is incredible.
Absolutely.
We'll be back with the Book of Boba Fett here on The Nerd Show, 103.1, 1310 KFKA. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Nerd Show with Micah Kilpatrick, our wonderful producer, Scott Magerflesh, our guest, special guest for the next 8 to 9 weeks. We'll see. Well, I hope so. We got that planned.
Yeah.
And then me, Nick Kenny. Stay tuned for an all-new Nick's Snacks tonight on 1310 KFKA. But just to wrap up, that one last nod that we were talking about in between breaks. Scott, take it away.
Well, you know, Micah made reference to it, but absolutely love the fact when they're up there and Jamie Foxx and Electro, and he's like, man, I thought Spider-Man was black.
And that's a nod to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
It is. Well, Miles Morales. Yeah.
And it was used to be my favorite Spider-Man movie, but this has just edged it out. Yeah.
But it was great that we see that. And then he says, well, maybe I guess somewhere there might be a black Spider-Man. And I love the fact they do that because, once again, they're opening it all up and you can go wherever you need to. But yeah, when we were talking at the break, it was like we couldn't not mention that.
So, no, we couldn't. There's so much to talk about. We could do a whole segment on Spider-Man. I felt that, or the whole show, I mean, because it's just so rushed to try to cover all the awesome things. So we'll do our best to fill in those gaps throughout the year. But a lot of good things going to happen this year for the Nerd Show. But we started with the Book of Boba Fett that aired last week.
Mm-hmm.
38 minutes of Well, Boba Fett.
Yeah.
More screen time than he ever got in the original trilogy by a tenfold. Yeah. But, you know, let's just dive into it a bit. There was not a word spoken for the first 9.5 minutes. 9.5 minutes, not one word.
Well, I think English word, because there was some Jawa that were doing their thing, and there was some Tusken, you know, communication there. But as far as anything that was either
recognizable
in basic or that was subtitled,
But, you know, it starts with what we've been waiting for since 1983.
How did he get
out? Return of the Jedi. How does he get out? You know what I love is he's down there in the belly of the Sarlacc, and it's truly a nod to Patton Oswalt's filibuster in Parks and Recreation, where he starts going off about what's going to happen with Boba Fett, and you know he's got a character in Parks and Rec, and it's just kind of silly. If you watch the entire cut, it's I think 14 minutes long of him just rambling about Star Wars and then how it's going to meld with all these other universes and fandoms. But, you know, Boba's down there. You get a little bit of a neck seal, you know, from a stormtrooper helmet that supplies oxygen. He gets that much-needed air as he's in the Sarlacc pit. We don't know for how long. Was it an hour? Was it a day? Was it a week?
It's been a little bit because we see the wreckage of Jabba's sail barge, and it's been completely stripped. So we know it's been at least long enough for the Jawas to get after it.
So. Yeah, which could be a couple hours because we saw that with Din two seasons ago. But, you know, it's been a while. And you have the sand, you see the pit and the pit of Carcoon, and here comes Boba's fist just through the sand and he's coming out. And then, of course, the Jawas show up and strip him of all his armor, which is how we know that Cobb Vanth gets it because when the Jawas save him, you know, that's what
then
he wants.
He barters with it.
To get Boba's armor.
That were in the Cantolo, he gets that. But
so this episode is really back and forth. You're getting a lot of flashbacks. Boba's in the back to tank. We're trying to piece things together. I mean, it starts with on Kamino when he's a kid and picking up Jango's helmet after Mace Windu decapitates him. So we're just getting a lot of information very rapidly with a lot of powerful music and just wondering, okay, where are they going with this? You know, and then he's woken up, of course, by Fennec. Well, they got work to do. Some tributes coming.
People to meet.
You know, Boba Fett is now the crime lord, the crime boss. I won't say on Tatooine entirely, but at least where Jabba's palace was, which is near Mos Espa. That's where Anakin grew up or was a slave, and we get reintroduced to...
Which is not Mos Eisley, so we got to remember that. We're talking about two different cities here. We were introduced to Mos Eisley's, you know, but this is Mos Espa, so different city in the Star Wars universe. So
which is different than Anchorhead.
It is different than Anchorhead.
We hear about it in Episode 4 with Luke and how he can take Obi-Wan to as far as Anchorhead, and we get a nod to that where eventually Boba gets...
Yeah.
Captured by Tusken Raiders.
Yep.
And we've learned the last couple of seasons with the Mandalorian, you know, the Tuskens aren't really that bad.
They've done a lot of bad things. And they're vicious, but there's a much deeper story there than what has ever been explored and what we've talked about other than in some of the books that had kind of been decanonized. But we're seeing nods to those as well. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we had... Well, introduced to a brand new, would you call it a tribe of Tusken Raiders? I love their robes, you know, the dark robes. It's really popping. Even the Tuskens we've had in the past couple seasons of Mando, we're wearing that traditional brown that we saw in Episode 4 and when Anakin went and did his deed. That was, I think, the day he turned to the dark side.
Yeah, I think so, too. But
when he slaughtered them like animals.
And again, if you... You know, have read the books and you've gone through some of that stuff. I think there's a possibility that the head of that Tusken tribe we're dealing with could end up being Darth Krayt.
Interesting.
So I don't know that for sure. I have no inside information, but it sets it up that could be just the look and the dark robes and everything else. Just is kind of like maybe this is one of those Tusken Sith Lords that we've read about that we are going to re-canonize. So.
Or just a nod as they piece together some things to fit into the story.
Sure.
So all that. Because we've been seeing a lot of that, even in Marvel, too.
Oh, yeah.
Disney's doing a good job. Well, we get the tributes. You know, Fennec's in there. He's Boba's sitting on the throne. And, well, people aren't so kind. Well, they're giving him coins and Wookiee rugs and all that stuff. You know. But the mayor's little sidekick, you know, is...
The mayor's majordomo was a little bit interesting because it was sort of... trying to flip the script with Boba that we're not going to bring you a tribute. You need to bring tribute to us. And you know, kind of letting them know that maybe the old way of doing things was no longer going to be appreciated or accepted, or maybe even that Bibb had changed the way that they operated within the local government. So we'll find out.
Fennec wanted to kill the guy.
Yeah.
You want to make a statement? You know, it would have fed you to Jabba's menagerie.
Menagerie, yeah.
You know, and I like exploring that a bit. We know there was a rancor. We know even though the Sarlacc wasn't Jabba's, that was a tool he used to execute people. What else did Jabba have? What else does Jabba... We met the rancor, the Bad Batch.
But that's not the same rancor.
Oh, it's not?
It's not. It's a different rancor.
Oh, well, that makes me sad.
It's okay. But there's multiple rancors, and that's all right. And I think in some of the books in the Tales from Jabba's Palace, which Kevin J. Anderson actually edited and did some of the work in that, who's a Colorado resident. But anyways, they talk about some of those things in there, and none of them are coming to me off the top of my head. I should have read that before today. But yeah, there's a lot of references of other things that Jabba kept in the dungeon, just as his pets or treats or whatever.
So. What are they going to – hopefully not a crate dragon. There's no way he could have taken a crate dragon.
No, I don't think so.
The droid. We didn't even talk about the droid.
Well, you get 88. Yep.
Who was torturing one of the gonk droids in Jabba's palace as R2 and 3PO are being shuttled around after Luke so nicely donates them. As tribute to Jabba.
Tribute.
Wow, it's all starting to make sense now. And C-3PO was not in on that plan, of course, because he did not react well to that. And I like the nod of Boba saying, we need a protocol droid.
Yeah.
Because, that's what Jabba had with C-3PO. Mm-hmm. Just those small things.
Yeah.
Just make my heart warm as a Star Wars fan. And then we get the two Gamorreans in there, the Gamorrean guards.
And I like the fact that these Gamorreans looked more like Gamorreans. Because if you remember in the Mandalorian series, when we saw the Gamorreans fighting at the beginning of season 2, they didn't really look like Gamorreans.
No. They were chicken legs for crying out
they
loud.
They were smaller guys with just, the Gamorrean, head on, but they didn't look like it. These looked much closer to the Gamorreans that we were used to. And I like that they were smaller because they probably have had to fend for themselves and they've been in prison, so they wouldn't be quite as big as the ones in Jedi, but I thought they were closer to what I expected, so I like
that. Well, yeah, and the 8B8's trying to
you got to kill him, and he's like, I'm not going to do that.
No, he's not going to rule by fear. We saw that in all the previews.
And I like the fact, because I mentioned that last week, that I was a little bit concerned on what that was going to turn Fett into, and it wasn't that, he wasn't going to be ruthless and mean. He just wanted to build respect for his capabilities as opposed to just always, killing someone. So I like the fact that they did that in a way that didn't really diminish Fett as an individual and as a ruthless a semi-ruthless crime boss.
Well, yeah. And thank God he didn't get rid of him because when they go to town, they go to Mos Espa, we get to see a nice glimpse of the city. That was where the Boontief pod races were too, if you remember from episode 1. But he visits a nice, very high-end cantina. And Max Rebo has a job.
Max Rebo's back, and I am not sure that we can say that that's Fringin Dan next to him. Could have been any member of the modal nodes, or it could have been could have been another character of that same species. I think they're Bith, but it doesn't have to be him. Everybody's trying to make it Fringin Dan.
But they're playing a jazzier version of what we got in episode 4.
And then we
four.
See the RX droid, so a nod to Rex from the original Star Tours, dealing, cards, might have been Sabacc. But oh my gosh, Jennifer Beal was just incredible as, kind of the owner of that, of Sanctuary, the Sanctuary.
I hope she's back. I hope she's a recurring character.
I would really like to, because I think she did amazing in that and was great to see that.
It was that bossy, that flirty, I was like, oh gosh, is something going to happen here? This looks like a nice establishment. And no, within a moment, want us to clean up your helmets a bit? Like, what does that even mean?
Helmet. Yeah.
of course, Boba's come back filled to the brim with coins.
And they had the Republic logo or the Rebellion logo on them too, if you noticed in there. So that was interesting that we've seen an establishment that Republic credits are now good.
They will do fine.
Exactly.
On Tatooine. Stay tuned for more of the Book of Boba Fett here on The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. back to the Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. We're recapping the Book of Boba Fett, sponsored by Right Coast Pizza to keep us fed and fueled up. They actually don't feed us. That would be nice.
That would be.
That would be.
Well, they feed us if we pay them.
That's fair.
That's true.
That is true. Good old capitalism.
Which I happen to do all the time.
Frequently. We're talking Book of Boba Fett. We're just recapping the first majority of the episode. Right before Boba and Fennec get ambushed after leaving the sanctuary by these pretty highly trained assassins. I mean, it was just straight out of an Assassin's Creed game.
Slash parkour.
Yes, it was like a scene from The Office when they're parkouring and, you know, something.
I don't think that's the same.
Not even close. But when I referenced earlier in the show about the Gamorreans, you know, they came in and well, it was a brutal fight.
Now, before you get to that, the one other thing that we still are going to have to figure out what it meant is that as they're leaving the sanctuary bar, the boss says to, you know, he says, thank you, and we'll see you again. And she's like, "What? You know, please come whenever you want. After all, it is yours." And so it's like, we'll have to figure out what that means because, you know.
Now, is that Boba's?
I don't know.
To me, Bib didn't seem like the guy. Oh, and they're talking, you know, I love the throwbacks to ancient Egypt, you know, of Boba should have been carried in by the Gamorreans. And I like this Boba Fett.
Yeah.
I am a fan of this Boba Fett and how they kind of pivoted and adjusted from him being a ruthless bounty hunter to him being a crime lord, which doesn't mean you have to be ruthless.
And I have a feeling that some of the backstory that we're learning when he's having the flashbacks when he's in Bacta is going to get into some of that as to the why.
Probably a lot of it with you know, I don't know, Jango's death and what happened, you know, all the way up to Empire Strikes Back and then really briefly there. I don't know how much is going to be tied in, but I think this whole series is going to have those flashbacks. But how serious are Boba's injuries that he needs to be in Bacta? I mean, of course, he looks a lot better than he did when he was with the Tuskens.
Yep.
But even after, you know, those shocks with the electro blades and stuff during that scuffle, a battle fight, which there are no blaster fights, blaster fires, blaster shots.
Not yet.
At all.
Yeah.
Which I was wondering, where the hell get your blasters?
Yeah. Well, but he did have the rocket launcher and he blew the one guy up off of the wall, which
was
pretty cool.
Dang awesome. It was turned to dust. But you know, just needing that back to. So what other injuries? Are they lingering injuries from the Sarlacc? Are they injuries from his time under captivity with the Tuskens? How long is he going to stay with the Tuskens? You know, he goes back in, and that's where we end this episode is this big fight, you know, when he's with this little child Tusken and that Massif, is that what they are?
The dog. Yeah.
And Boba tries to escape. Doesn't go well because the Rodian starts squealing like, all right, well, you don't know how to escape. But they just go out and they're searching for those gourds of water. We get a throwback to those miners who we saw from the season two of The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. You know, the miners who took over Mos Pelgo. And we get introduced to Cobb Vanth, of course. Yeah. So that was a nice little throwback there. But you know, they're out digging and yeah, I wasn't a big fan of this reptile centaur looking creature.
I've seen the reference, and so it's not my own, but I've seen a lot of people. It felt like something out of Jason and the Argonauts. It just really did. It seemed like some.
It didn't fit Tatooine.
It didn't really, because a lot of the other things that they've done really do, and this one didn't seem to fit so much. But obviously, they needed it in order to move the story forward because he's kind of protecting the little one. He hasn't killed him like he could have, and so the I think
and we
that's
see he could have
oh
too.
Yeah, absolutely.
This whole time with Boba Fett, I think what we fail to recognize, or at least immediately, is, you know, he might be beaten down to a pulp, but he could have taken that kid out. He could have taken that massive out. He could have taken the Rodian out. I mean, he takes down this massive, I don't know, 12-foot beast with four giant ripped arms and big legs and just suffocates him, just like Leia choked
Jabba.
For them to take the head, and he's kind of welcomed back into that Tusken camp. I mean, he took a beating then, too, but there was no Bacta, so I don't know. I think this is some other injury that...
It could be. And then also, he went back to the Tusken camp. You know, more than likely, he could have, you know, just sent the kid on his way and scared him and then gone off on his own. But he chose to come back to the camp, and he's helping the kid become elevated within the Tusken culture. And we'll learn more about that. And obviously, the chief gives him a nod. And so I think we'll see that relationship develop and everything else. You know, the one thing that I had an issue with in the episode was, all right, so at the beginning of The Mandalorian season two, when Din Djarin leaves with Boba's armor, and we see Boba watch him leave. So he had an idea of where it was for a long time. So how long after he gets, you know, recovered enough from the Tuskens and he separates from them, does he let Cobb Vanth keep wearing it? And I'm still having a little bit of a hard time, and I hope we flesh that out a little bit more, that hopefully that when Boba showed up and he sees Din right off with the armor, that's literally right after he had somehow been able to be released from the Tusken, you know, tribe, and they had pointed him in the direction, this is how you go find your armor, this is where it is, or here's how you go find the Jawas. But if he's been on his own and been out in the open for a long period of time, I'm going to have a hard time understanding how they justify him.
We've got a 9-year gap.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. So, in 9 years.
So he's still wearing the Tusken robes after 9 years. So is he with the Tuskens for those 9 years? Yeah. Is he off world? Is he recovering? Yeah. Is he healing? Is he learning the Tusken ways? Like, I mean, we know Mando can communicate with the Tuskens. Mm-hmm. Probably Boba can too. That's a great point of, was he waiting? He's not a guy to wait for somebody else to do the deed for him.
And the other thing is he's taken his helmet off quite a bit. You know, I mean, literally the moment they walk into the bar, he takes his helmet off. And so there's a little bit of maybe creating some separation between the cult that, you know, Bo-Katan references with the this is the way. And so we're getting some of that story in there. I don't know.
Well, we didn't see his helmet off. No one took the helmets off, really.
No, we never saw it.
Because that was the big reveal with Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi. But I was watching some deleted scenes from Episode 2 the other day, just going through, you know, stuff that was taken out of the films. And when Anakin and Padme are on trial on Geonosis, Jango's standing there with his helmet off.
Yeah, he is.
So I think Jango didn't have his helmet on when Obi-Wan first meets him. He only had him on in the arena and when he's battling Obi-Wan on Kamino. So it doesn't bother me too much of how frequently his helmet is off. But I like that he's not hiding behind the mask and he, you know, really isn't that ruthless bounty hunter. Now things could change this season. You know, I was told that, well, you know, all the rumors that are flying around that you know, the big villains are going to be, or the big pain is going to be Crimson Dawn and Kira, or it's going to all those what we got in the trailer was just from the first half of the first episode. Well, no, we didn't get a lot of those things, but I think we're going to see a lot more. It was a little slow. I was disappointed with how slow it was after 38 minutes. I enjoyed it. Kind of like Hawkeye, I think it started off slow and will probably have a big build, because how can you not with Fennec and Boba Fett? But I wanted more. I felt I was longing for more after that first
episode.
I would love
to see Black Sun. And if we get Prince Xizor some way, somehow in this series, I will call it a win. Just if there's some element of that in it, because, you know, that was just such a great book and a great opportunity.
And it opens up another world for us. Yes. I mean, we're going to see the crime lord, that true grit that we only got a glimpse of at the beginning of Solo, and that was just on Corellia. We're talking a galaxy-wide crime ring that Boba's going to be creating. Mm-hmm. So we have 8 episodes left to review. Tune in every week on The Nerd Show to hear our perspective, help us to dig deep, and enjoy the Book of Boba Fett. Thanks for listening.